Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the EG Property Podcast. I'm your host for today's episode, EG editor Sam McClary. Today I'm joined by Derwent London Chief Executive Paul Williams and Head of Sustainability John Davies to talk about the company's pathway to net zero. The firm was among more than 20 real estate owners that in September last year signed up to the Better Buildings Partnership's climate commitment. It was a commitment that not only committed them to achieving net zero carbon, but to publishing, before the end of this year, the path they would follow to achieve net zero. It's hoped that these pathways will not only hold businesses true to their targets, but will also provide ideas and best practice for others to follow. So sit back, grab a cuppa, or settle into your commute or your daily workout, and listen in to this conversation with Paul and John about why sustainability matters and how the London REIT is going to ensure that it hits its challenging and self-imposed target of reaching net carbon zero by 2030. And don't forget the usual disclaimer, this interview was recorded over Teams, so while I can guarantee you the quality of insight and information from my guest today, I can't guarantee that the quality of sound is what you had come to expect from EG pre-lockdown. So here we are, another episode of the excellent EG Property Podcast. And today I am joined by Paul Williams, Chief Executive of Derwent London, and John Davies, who's Head of Sustainability at Derwent London. And I'm joined by them today because Derwent is launching its Pathway to Zero Carbon today, which is a big document and a really difficult pathway to achieve, I suppose. And Paul, I'm gonna start with you because we've talked a lot actually about Derwent and its focus on sustainability. And I'd just like to hear a little bit from you about why this pathway is really important, what net zero and sustainability means to Derwent, and I guess that, you know, you brought in your targets by a couple of decades, which is quite something. So just your view from the top, I suppose, about what sustainability means.
Oh, thank you very much, Sam. I think it's really important to us. It's really a journey. We've been sort of doing this since 2013. But we started with some really good initiatives a few years ago with our white collar factory. And also a lot of discussions we've had with our occupiers. You know, if I talk to all the business contacts we've got, green issues are very important to them. It's very important with the decision-making process going forward. So we announced earlier this year that our commitment to net zero carbon by 2030, but we thought it was important we actually had a real document that guided us through that process, and we considered all the aspects that we need to do. And some are simpler things to do than others. And obviously we're designing buildings that are net zero carbon. Our first one is 80 Charlotte Street, but our two next projects, Soho Place and Featherstone Building, will also be net zero carbon. But this is going to need a lot of thought, a lot of work, and we're going to work collaboratively with our occupiers, because I think the biggest thing we need to do is reduce consumption, get carbon down. I think we've managed to reduce our carbon since 2013 by about 44%, but we know we've got more work to do. So this is going to need collaboration with our occupiers across our portfolio, but also with the industry. And I think for Derwent, if we could take a lead in this, that would be good.
And that's one of the great things about the agreement that so many landlords and investors have signed up to with the BBP, isn't it? And that you have all committed to publishing your pathways to net zero, I guess, to hopefully share some best practice.
I think that's right. I think one of the things we also thought that we would want is to be independently assured. So it's one thing us sort of giving a book at the end of the year and announcing our achievements, but we like to held to our task, a bit like our health and safety policy, and making sure that we do get this independently assured. So Deloitte are going to help us to assure it and just make sure that our targets are met. But it's good to see others having similar aspirations. I think bringing in 20 years is the right decision, and I think we've all got to push this forward. Obviously, COVID at the moment is complex, but I don't think we should take our eye off the ball. And if I think we talk to all our customer base, it's really important to them as well. So this is an opportunity as well as a challenge.
Fantastic, thank you. And John, as head of sustainability, I guess quite a lot of this falls on your shoulders. So can you talk us through the pathway a little bit and how that's been put together, where you see the easy wins, for want of a better phrase, and where you see that actually you're going to have to work really hard and, as Paul said, really work with occupiers and partners to achieve this?
Yeah, definitely. It's something, as Paul mentioned, that we've been working through now for many months to try and really get to grips with the scale of what's in front of us and about the urgency, I suppose, of where we are and bringing our targets forward, as you say, by a couple of decades. And this has really sort of set the scene. And I think Paul will certainly agree that himself and the rest of the executive team have really locked in to this agenda, because it's so important to all our stakeholders. And that's been one of the key things in developing the pathway, is trying to understand what all our stakeholders need. So Paul mentioned about, you know, all the interaction we've had of late with our occupiers. You know, obviously that's been centered around COVID-19, but more broadly, this is a real key issue for them, and making sure that they've got the right kind of space for their organization, the healthy and productive working environments. Through to our, you mentioned the investment community, they want to understand how we as a business are resilient against the effects of climate change. And so this has really helped shape our thinking, and it's really helped shape the way that we came about this pathway document. As you mentioned, we were one of the 20 plus signatories to the BBP's climate change commitment. And I suppose that represents a huge shift, particularly in our sector, the built environment sector, of people coming together under one banner, which is really, 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 really good to see. Our pathway itself is fairly simple in the way that it sets out the goals that we want to achieve. And I suppose breaking it down into three areas, the first sort of bastion, if you like, of the pathway is that it's centered around trying to reduce our energy consumption, so therefore our outturn carbon. That's really where we want to focus our efforts, so the real hard work stuff. And you know, we've been doing a lot of work to analyze how we can do better than the 44% reduction that Paul mentioned, how we really can drive that usage down. And then after that, look at the energy that we're purchasing as Derwent London. We've been on a path of all renewable electricity now for a number of years, so all our buildings are powered by electricity, which is REGO backed, which stands for the renewable energy generation obligations. So we've got that in place, but we're looking at trying to explore things like green gas as well to try and offset the carbon that comes from the use of gas in our portfolio. But also we're trying to look at removing gas from our properties as well. So that's not only our new developments, but also our existing standing portfolio as well, and the efforts that we can apply to retrofitting those buildings. And as Paul mentioned earlier on, that we have some really good blueprints now for what we believe are high quality sustainable buildings. So he mentioned White Collar Factory, and more recently, obviously, we've released completed our 80 Charlotte Street development, which is our first all electric building and a real milestone for our business. So that there's the energy piece, and the last part, I suppose, is centered around the occupier engagement piece. And our pathway, it encompasses the energy and the carbon that's associated with our tenant use as well. And that's one of the key differentiators for us, is that we're putting our arms around that tenant-landlord relationship, and we're not trying to disaggregate what we do as Derwent London and our tenants, but we're trying to bring them into this agenda and start bringing them, you know, closer to net zero, and trying to help them better and further what they do as a business.
Fantastic. I'd like to stick with that sort of occupier engagement bit for a little while, and then we'll come back to sort of the energy generation. In terms of occupier engagement, I guess throughout COVID, there's been two stories, hasn't there? There's been a closeness between occupiers and landlords, in that our communities have come together and we've spoken a lot more. In the retail world, they've maybe separated a bit more, but there's hopefully one area where we can all come together, and that is the security of the planet and making sure that there's somewhere for us all to live going forward. And it seems to be something that unites employees anyway. So I'd just be keen to hear from you what kind of conversations you're having with occupiers around the sort of sustainability agenda, and if particularly if there's if in your conversations with future tenants that their approach to sustainability, their net zero targets play a role in whether you want them in your buildings. Paul?
I think that's a really interesting question. I mean, if you look at the recent completion of 80 Charlotte Street and the announcement both by Boston Consulting and Arup, sustainability played a very strong part of their decision-making process to take the building. And, you know, when we look at our potential new customers, we always, for our new developments, we always set out our requirements. We actually put them in agreement for leases, and we set out our targets for BREEAM or LEED or EPC. And, you know, we set ourselves pretty strong targets, which are monitored independently, which we have to comply with. So it's a huge part of the decision-making process for our new occupiers, but it's also important that we stay engaged with all our existing tenants and customers to make sure that we update them as well going on, because you can put something in a lease, but actually, which may get reviewed on early days, but it's how you monitor things as you go along. So we have no lift days, and as you know, we have some running tracks, and we have some gyms, and we have lots of wellness in our building. So I think it's important early discussions to have with them. I think wellness is definitely coming along as well. So I think Featherstone building will be first wellness certified building. But I think this thing will just get more and more momentum. Because you're right, we've all got a duty to look after the planet. So I think it's embedded in the way how we do our business, because we're very customer focused. We manage everything internally, so it gives us an opportunity to talk to people. And you're right, the last few months has given us an opportunity to engage positively with our occupiers, help them where we can do, but also respond to their long-term needs. Mm. I think the tricky bit, the challenge, is to make sure we get some change in behaviour, that people start reducing consumption. Maybe we run the air conditioning a little less and put the heating on a little less, and try to reduce tenants' consumption. And that can only really be done through collaboration and cooperation.
Yeah. John, would you agree with that?
Very much so. And, you know, the recent events have only, I think, helped improve those lines of communication. And, you know, for us, it does not diminish our ambition whatsoever. I think it supports our ambition to really bring our tenants closer to this agenda. And many of our tenants have, as Paul mentioned, have some very ambitious targets of their own. And, you know, sometimes, you know, it's we have to sort of catch them up. But I think, you know, for those that aren't quite so familiar with this, I think there's a lot that we can help them with, whether it's simple provision of energy consumption data or carbon data, helping them understand how they can run their spaces more efficiently, through to how they can run their offices better. And I think there's a huge scope to affect change and affect behavior, and also help us move away from that sort of slightly more traditional them and us landlord tenant relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure, you know, some of the big occupiers are able to sort of progress with their plans. But some of the smaller occupiers, some of the startups, maybe the SMEs, they're, you know, this is a difficult thing for them to do. So having someone who can hold their hand along the way, I'm sure is greatly appreciated.
I think that's right. I think we can help with them. But also, of course, some of the consumption of the building is through the service charge. So whatever we do to work collaboratively to reduce consumption in the building will help the occupiers in any case, particularly the smaller ones, because they're service charge would be lower. So there's a cost with this as well as a benefit.
Yeah, it's kind of bringing it back to that. This is good business as well as good for the planet, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I'm a strong believer that green buildings are going to be worth more than brown buildings. And I think we've got our responsibilities anyway. But I think actually this is it's a good business decision as well as being environmentally and morally the right decision.
Yeah, excellent. And let's talk about energy then. Talk me through Charlotte Street and building a electric only building. What you learned from that? How easy or how difficult it was, and how you're going to be using that as a blueprint going forward.
John, do you want to answer that question? I think you've been a big part of that setting the brief.
Yeah, sure, certainly. I think, you know, this has provided our business with an amazing template, an amazing blueprint for how we can move forward with the all electric agenda. And I suppose it's worth sort of pointing out for the listeners on the podcast that, you know, one of the key drivers here is that we need to try and make buildings as carbon efficient as we can. And natural gas, unfortunately, carries some really hefty carbon penalties with it. So the movement to an all electric heating and cooling system is seen as a really good pathway, because obviously we can supply our buildings with renewable electricity to help balance up and neutralize that carbon equation. And I think it's also worth sort of pointing out that, you know, the movement for the 80 Charlotte Street all electric agenda has been many, many years in the making. Paul, you'll know probably much better than I do when the precise sort of date was sort of stamped in stone. But, you know, we had a really sort of forward thinking design team who sort of saw this as effectively the way that we needed to go as a business. So we signed up to this many, many years ago. So it's not just a recent thing in the past sort of year or two before completion and sort of swapping out kit. You know, this is something we signed up to a long, long time ago. And I think at that time, it wasn't an easy thing to do. So, you know, it was a brave step for our business, a little bit of the unknown, because nobody was really doing all electric heating and cooling on the scale that we have at 80 Charlotte Street, 300,000 plus square feet building. You know, it's not small, you know, so that requires, you know, a really knowledgeable design team, a really forward thinking and knowledgeable client to sort of sign up to that, and an architect as well. So, you know, there's a lot that went into that. And I think, you know, now that we're seeing the benefit of it today, and as I say, it's provided us with a fantastic blueprint for our buildings going forward.
I mean this project started 13 years ago, but it comes back from a lot of the history of Derwent, even back to things like the Angel building up in Islington, when I think it was we had a really strong BREEAM accident and our occupiers, Cancer Research and Expedia, were looking for some targets. And I think we started thinking about these sort of thing, those sort of things then. So it has been a journey for us, but obviously we've raised the bar as we go along. And we thought, you know, why not do an all electric building? I think this is, we'll learn those lessons for both Soho Place and Featherstone, and then maybe Baker Street going on, and try to make the buildings as carbon neutral as possible, and try and make sure that too much energy is not lost, or make sure that we actually use the embedded energy within the building, like white collar factories, so that when you run the buildings, it's even more efficient and you've actually got the concrete helping you.
And, you know, and it's, you know, you started a trend, as Derwent always does, with all electric buildings. I'm certainly seeing planning applications come through now, and lots of people talking about, you know, the first electric tower in the city, for example. So it's really, really great to see you leading the way again.
Oh, good. Well, we've got to keep pushing ourselves though. But it's good to see others doing really good stuff as well. We learn also from what other people are doing abroad. I know in Holland, they do a lot of really interesting things. So I think if, you know, a lot of our shareholders are also a very interesting thing. We've got Dutch shareholders are very interested in our net zero carbon pathway. They've been long-term investors. The Americans are also joining this now. So you'll find that, you know, there's a demand from not only the customer base, but also our investors.
And I guess this isn't a competition, is it? It's for the greater good. So the Correct. More that we can learn from each other, the better.
Well, we're always happy to share best practice. I think I do think this needs to be an industry thing. There's no point Derwent doing it on his own because, you know, we do good things, but I think others joining and each pushing ourselves along is got to be a good thing. And when we look at our developments, we always talk to our contractors about this, and it's good to see a lot of our peers doing similar things.
Fantastic. And now, when people think of Derwent London, I think they, well, clues in the title, they think of London and you being a leader there. But in your pathway, you actually talk about your Scottish estate and how you want to utilise that more and use that as an energy solution. For those listeners who aren't aware that you have an estate up in Scotland, can you tell us a little bit more about that and what you're going to be doing with it?
John, I think we've got some really interesting plants up in Scotland.
We have, 5,000
acres. What a great opportunity to offset, etc. We'd much rather not be spending money offsetting. We might much rather be actually offsetting properly. So, John, do you want to talk Sam through the plans?
Yeah, definitely. It's a little known fact, as you were saying, Sam, that we have a fairly healthy sized Scottish estate, so just over 5,000 acres. And as part of our sort of planning work for our pathway, myself and one of the other executive directors, Nigel George, who sort of, you know, leads the work on a Scottish estate, and Rich Oliver, one of our asset managers as well, we sort of sat down one day and we just sort of looked at the plan on the table, and we just sort of said to ourselves, you know, we've got all this in front of us. How can it help? It must be able to help in some way. And so we just worked through a couple of ideas. And we thought to ourselves, oh, hang on a second, we need now to really push on with our renewable energy agenda. And we recognise that we will have to undertake some kind of carbon offsetting throughout our journey to 2030. So is there some way that we can do that ourselves, you know, a bit more entrepreneurial, a little bit more sort of self-sufficient and really, really, really try and do it on our own, I suppose. And we have come up with some fantastic opportunities that we're currently working through with our consultant team up in Scotland, looking at potentially generating our own electricity from the estate. We're also looking at gas generation opportunities from the estate for some of the buildings which we may not be able to bring over to an all-electric nature by 2030, and also the opportunity for forestry and tree planting in Scotland. And we did about 5 or 6 years ago now, we did sort of a trial run, I suppose. We planted a 40 hectare planting scheme in Scotland, and only about 4 or 5 months ago we've received our first batch of homegrown carbon offsets for our business. So we've done a sort of small sample size. We know it works, and we know that we can do it. So what we're currently working through now is some of the sizing of those projects and how we're going to go about investing in those. But it's a really, really exciting agenda, I think, for everybody in the business. You know, it really gets to the core of how we operate as a business, you know, very entrepreneurial, very sort of forward thinking. And it's going to present a fantastic closed loop story for our buildings and for our occupiers, knowing that they are going to have, you know, their buildings and spaces powered by, you know, Derwent London generated, hopefully, energy.
Excellent. Derwent Energy. I like the sound of that. And great as well with the, you know, I know when we talk about carbon offsetting, it's the sort of side of sustainability that people sort of whisper about a little bit, as it's, you know, it's better than the alternative, but it's not the ideal, isn't it? So nice to be able to have it in that closed loop.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's right. I think just paying the tax is the wrong solution. I think reduce your consumption and try and self-generate has got to be the way forward.
And this sounds like it's a great way as well for real estate to talk about the diversity of opportunities there are in the business, because I would have thought that people looking to Derwent for a career might not have understood that they could, you know, sort of work on an estate up in Scotland and look at reforesting, look at energy use and all that sort of thing. It brings in some more voices into the sector, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, obviously it's a fairly historic sector, and I think we you know, part of our responsibility to get that change, get different voices heard, different attitudes heard as well. So I think it's really interesting. John has a sustainability team, I think, of 4 or 5 people. It's something that I've been looking to push forward for some considerable period of time. And it's good that someone could come back from maybe a non-surveying background to be help influence a property industry company to perform even better. So there's lots of opportunities within the sector. We do lots of interesting things, whether it's digital or environmental or health and safety. So there are opportunities.
Fantastic. And then one of the other points that I noticed in the carbon pathway today that I'd love to hear a little bit more about how that works practically, I suppose, was you were talking about carbon accounting. So just really keen, and John, maybe you're the man to answer this question. Keen to know, you know, what is carbon accounting and how does that work?
Okay, yeah, definitely. I think before we go into that little bit of detail, I'd sort of like to sort of put a huge thanks out actually to our finance team, so Damien Wisniewski and Jay Joshi, because I think the concept of carbon accounting has really sort of come about from, you know, a number of conversations that we've had as a sort of a sustainability team and a finance team to work out how we can get everybody working seamlessly together. And this is a fantastic way of bringing in that financial rigor and that financial analysis into the sort of the sustainability world, but more specifically through carbon accounting. So the first step in the journey, as you might remember, Sam, that we launched a number of months back our green revolving credit facility or revolving credit facility with a green tranche within it, £300 million green tranche. That was the sort of we see that as the sort of the first bedrock piece of our net zero work with trying to secure and define our green financing. So how we would actually go about financing that, our projects and our activities. And then the other piece is this carbon accounting piece, which is then how do we then bring carbon in as a measurement metric into the financial world. So how can we carry that on from, okay, we're looking at an acquisition, what does that mean in carbon terms? So when we're appraising a potential acquisition opportunity, you know, how, what is the carbon liability that we could see ourselves, and what's the potential carbon benefit that we could see from redeveloping that site or repositioning that building or that space. So we're currently working with a team of consultants to come up with a carbon accounting, I suppose, tool, I think is the best way to describe that, that various parts of our business can use. So our investment colleagues who look at the investment and the disposal, sorry, the acquisition and disposal of properties, and also our financial forecasting team. So they can look at the longer term impacts of carbon on our, not only our existing portfolio, but also our new developments as well. And it also filters down to the development team. So they'll be able to understand the carbon liabilities of the various design choices that they undertake and the various carbon impacts that may have, and work out how we can reduce that. Because as we mentioned, the reduction and that hard work element reduction is a key pillar for us. And then ultimately then what the residual carbon will be, and then ultimately how we might treat that residual carbon. Are we going to offset it, or are we going to use another method? So it's designed, or it will be designed such that it threads all the way through that golden or that green thread, if you like, between the moment we acquire something, the moment we redevelop it, and the moment we bring it onto the market for tenants. Not to say that we've got it completely right and it's sorted and it's ready to go tomorrow. We're going through various iterations, but you know, we're keen to start doing that and really, as I say, drive that green thread through all of our financial decision making.
Fantastic. I think, and that's key, isn't it? I think having a sort of a carbon language that every player in this industry can talk. They'll, you know, there's a language for the finance types, there's a language for the occupiers, that for the contractors, that it's a complicated thing, sustainability, and different people view it in different ways. So being able to have languages that work for each element will be the key, I believe anyway. So you've started on this pathway. You've set yourself some pretty challenging targets. The key now, I guess, is with a pathway, you've absolutely got to walk it. So we're going to be watching you. I have no worries that you won't take steps forward, but it will be really great to travel along the pathway with you and see you get there. And you know, maybe you might even get there early, who knows. But congratulations on putting the pathway together. Enjoy the journey, and let's go real estate doing all that it can to help save this very wonderful planet of ours. So that's quite a pathway for them to travel down. Let's hope they do it with style and finesse and make it all the way to net zero. And do also remember that if you want to keep up with all the latest news, views, analysis and research that the EG Group has to provide, sign up to all of our property podcasts and subscribe to Radius Data Exchange for unlimited access to all of our content and comprehensive commercial real estate data.